Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about random shit this week, because we did not both go see, what's it called?
Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire?
Yeah, well, one of us saw it. One of us doesn't even know the name of the movie.
One of us hasn't even seen any of the, I don't even think you've seen any of the kaiju, or this version of this kaiju universe.
Does that Bryan Cranston Godzilla movie fall in this?
Yes, it does. It's actually the first one. Oh, okay.
I saw that one.
So. It's gone so wildly different since that one. It's kind of funny. But we can talk about that.
Is it because people just were so like, me kind of being one of them? Like, hey man, I came to see a Godzilla movie. There's no Godzilla in this Godzilla movie.
Well, yeah, that's the funniest part about the series is that, like, you know, I love Gareth Edwards. I mean, like, I liked the creator. I'm on board for anything that he does just because he's such a unique talent in his skill set. But man, he wanted to make like this weird Kubrick style. Like it was like it felt like it was inspired by Kubrick. Like because Kubrick would have done something like that, right? Like monster or Spielberg's Jaws, where it's like we don't see anything. But I mean, you know, Godzilla is a Maximus or a maximal, like it's a maximal thing. You need to see Godzilla all the time. And I will say the last two, including the TV series, have kind of gotten the like it's Japanese flavors but done in English language, an American style version that's like that's the right formula. They figured it out. It took them that Godzilla King of Monsters to kind of figure out what's the sweet spot for the Americanized version, because it truly is an Americanized version of kaiju films. So like, you know, and then the big thing, like, I know I'm gonna make a really controversial statement here, but I feel like as soon as they like, so, like, the last two films have been hindered by Millie Bobby Brown, and I do not like her in any way, shape, or form as an actress. She's just not, like, everything I hear her say, everything that I see her perform in, it's like she was forced into this life. And you know what? You don't have to be here anymore. So maybe you should just, you know, drop out. Like, you can stay a social media star, but stop making movies. Because I've seen her Damsel movie, and it's just as bad. She sinks everything. Like, and that's part of the problem with like some of the movie, like the last two movies, is they hanged everything on Millie Bobby Brown, and you can very much tell she hates everything she's doing, which makes the movie suffer. I feel like this one, Godzilla Kong, The New Empire, it's probably the best out of them all because they got rid of everything that either A, didn't want to be there, shouldn't have been there, and is just concentrated on like, let's just make a purely like wildly entertaining like kaiju movie that has like kaiju storylines. Like that's the wild thing about this one. Like the first one, like the first of the Kong and Zilla movies kind of did that. Like Adam Wingard, best thing possibly happened to this series director, because he gets it. He gets it, and he puts his own style on it. He does that, like he has that very much, like you know, like how some, like there was like in the late 2010s, like the mid to late 20, the teens, the 20 teens, I guess you would call them, how like we had all those people that did like Overdrive or synthcore with like neon and like the synthesizer, like techno music. He's a part of that. But he somehow manages to integrate it into his two films so beautifully, because and then it takes on this weird style of its own. And it actually has, like, see, like, my favorite part of kaiju movies is that they give the kaijus storylines. And it feels like he's the first, these are the, like, these last two give Kong and Godzilla respective storylines. Like, real stories. Like, they actually have, like, story arcs, which is wild to say if somebody's never been, like, never deep-dived into kaiju movies. But it's better off for it. That, and then you keep the good, like Rebecca Miller, Brian Tyree Henry, the young woman that's in, the young lady that's like, because there's like this big reveal for her, which is not really big if you kind of know kaiju movies, but I won't ruin it. But then they add in Dan Stevens, and Dan Stevens plays this guy called Trapper, and he's worked with Wingard before, right? And they're buddies because they made The Guest. I don't know if you've seen that movie. Yeah. That movie's fucking awesome, yeah, right?
I like The Guest. It's a lot of fun.
So, like, they created this character for him of this, basically this... this veterinarian surgeon for kaijus, and it's wild because he like dresses like he literally, you could tell they were like they were trying to fuck with people because he dresses like Ace Ventura. They even mention him dressing like Ace Ventura. He's got these loud Hawaiian shirts on, like combat boots. It's wild and funny and just the right amount of weird. Like it's a lot of fun. I'm not gonna say it's great because it's not. It's but it's highly entertaining. And I mean, I saw it on IMAX with in 3D, and they do the 3D right. Like you know, at a certain point, it just becomes this whole thing where it's more like you're getting into the depths of the view, and just to see like these ginormous monsters go at like you know fighting one another in very unique ways. Like each battle is not like the same battle. It's a lot of fun. If you're a kaiju fan, like this is like, I can only imagine that, our friend Spencer and his family, they're just going to have a fun time at this. Like, I can only imagine because I know that, Ezra is like, you know, he's a fan of the kaijus. I cannot imagine what's going to happen when he sees this movie. Like there's baby Kongs. Like there's a whole universe, like there's a whole storyline with Kong. It's wild, dude. Like it's the kind of stuff that
I was amazed they gave away parts of that in the trailer. I mean,
yeah,
I know we're full on in like, oh, we'll just show you all the highlights of the movie in trailers now. But like sometimes those big movies, you know, they'll hold back some surprises. And it's in the trailer, like, oh, we thought Kong was the only one. And you kind of get a glimpse of, like, this world. And I was like, God, that seems like you should have held on to that. So
they really should have because, like, it's not – okay, so, like, it's not what you think it is because that little Kong is a little dickhead at the beginning. And it's kind of funny because – there's a moment, I'll ruin it. Like, you know, if you guys don't want to listen to this, just skip past it. There's a fucking moment where Kong is fighting these other like Kong assholes that are like trying to beat the shit out of him and take his, he has this like axe, this like this special axe. I mean, they're trying to take it from him. And the little Kong has set him up. And at a certain moment, motherfucking Kong grabs the little Kong and uses him as like a hitting tool. Like he uses it like a bully stick or something, like a switch, and just hits these other Kongs with it and then chucks him like a mile away. It's hilarious. It's very much like the story kind of reminds me of like, it's weird because it's like I've been prepping to do like a big Planet of the Apes rewatch, not only the new stuff but the old stuff too, and it really kind of reminded me of the first film in the way that they weren't talking, but they were communicating with one another. It was very much so like that. It's a fun movie. Like if you, even if you didn't know the storyline, you could still go. And it's one of those things where it's like, it gives you just enough of a, like a backstory recap in the trailer that you're like, oh, okay, I get it. There's kaijus in this world and they're gonna, like, you know, Kong and Zilla are not really friends. And as long as they stay in their respective areas, they're okay. And then, of course, what happens? One of them goes into their other area and shenanigans happen. It's fun. It's like a lot of fun. Like, what I hate is that we've kind of, and I think, you know, we've kind of talked about this a lot. Like, it's a really big overarching thing, which is that not every film has to be perfect. Not every film has to be a fucking home run. This is like a solid double or a sliding triple, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the weight and the heft to be a home run, but very few films do. I'll make a statement right here and right now. I don't give a shit what everybody says about Dune 2. I don't care if Uncle Spielberg told us that Dune 2 is the best science fiction movie he's ever seen. It's not. I'm sorry, but 2001 ain't gonna beat, like, nobody's beaten that movie. Like, no one. I'm sorry, but no one is. Especially not Denis Villeneuve and his screaming masterpiece. And to be honest, like I don't want home runs all the time because they're boring. They're really boring. I think that you've even mentioned to me, like Madam Web unlocked something for you in 2024. And it's like, what's more interesting? The weird ass failures or the weird infused things that aren't home runs, but are like so interesting because they appeal to a specific audience? Or plain Jane banana cream pie. Well, I mean, banana cream pie isn't really plain Jane, like apple pie. Like, do you know, like, and that's what, like, Zilla is. Like, this Zilla universe, except for, like, you know, the Godzilla 2016, which was trying to go for a home run. And it just, I mean, like, I mean, baseball has started, right? And, like, you know, we just as an example, the Braves played last night and just murder, death, killed. Was it the Sixers?
Philadelphia.
Or the Phillies? Phillies, yeah. Like, murder, death, killed.
So them. Pretty. It was so pretty.
Not often do you get, like in baseball, because it's so long, you get those. But more often than not, you don't get those murder, death, kills, right? Like, sometimes wins are ugly, but there's beauty in that. And I feel like film is kind of the same way for me. It's like, and I think that you feel the same way, which is that it's like, give me the interesting failures or the interesting ones that aren't home runs, because, you know, things that are interesting usually typically aren't. You only get everywhere, everything, and all at once. Like, you only get one of those once, maybe every decade or two.
Yeah.
You know, so we come and go. But yeah, that's my thing. Did you have any questions, or did you like?
It's weird because like a lot of the movies, I mean, you see so much more than I do. And I'm like, yeah, I really do want to catch up with that. But then there are the ones like Dune where I'm like, yeah, I have zero interest in, like, maybe one day I might watch them, but like, they're just not. I'm not at all interested. Like, there's no drive in me to, like, catch up on that. It's the same with the MonsterVerse stuff. I remember going to see Godzilla, and I thought it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, once the ball started rolling on all that, I was like, oh, I'm checked out. Like, I have no interest in any of this.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, I honestly feel like that's okay. Like, it's weird how like filmdom has put this shame thing into people who don't want to see something that's a big ass movie. It's like, well, I like, what do you care? Like, literally, what do you care? It's like those bozos that like we're championing Endgame to beat Avatar to be the biggest movie of all time. It's like, what? What are you fucking doing? What? Yeah. Like, why are you so stupid? Like, why are you so dumb? It's like the stupid gif or whatever, like that meme clip of
Why are you the way that you are?
Yeah. It's like, what? Just leave me the fuck alone. Like, leave me alone to my weird corner of filmdom, right? But, you know, of course, they have to poke and prod us, like, oh, why don't you go see Dune 2? Dune 2 is great. It's amazing. Yeah, just like everybody else, you think, like, you're hive mind.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, there's a guy that we work opposite shifts, but every single time he sees me, he's like, have you watched Dune yet? I'm like, Jake, I'm not going to watch the movie. And honestly, like, you know, it's stupid and juvenile, but seeing you once or twice a week and you asking me if I watched it makes me want to watch it less.
Less. Exactly. No, yes. I feel the same way. Like, when somebody starts needling me about, like, seeing something, it's the quickest way for me to go, nah, bro, I'm cool. Because let me do, like, I don't know about you, but there's some times where I navigate my own waters. And so, like I said, like, I'm planning this big Planet of the Apes thing because it interests me, right? Because I want to be able to, like I did the same thing with the monster, like, with the Monsterverse, right? But I only did a couple of them because that's my choice, right? Like, you know, like, I pregame, like, I love pregaming for things just because it kind of hypes me up. But that's me. I don't have, like, but I don't ask you to do that. I don't ask anybody else to do that, right? Like, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with not being a part of the hive. And I don't get that. Like, I don't get why, like, so many, like, I understand wanting to have a conversation about it. But, you know, if you weren't so inclined to be, like, telling somebody, it's the, have you seen that Tom Hollander, not Tom Holland, but Tom Hollander, who got a check from Tom Holland's Spider-Man days, but Tom Hollander, have you seen that stupid meme of him where he's opening up the old man's eyes? Like, that's the way I fucking feel. Oh, okay, I'll send it to you. But it's just like, that's the way I feel. Or like Clockwork Orange, when they're trying to, like, they're making him watch that movie and they have the clips opening his eyes. That's the fucking way I feel sometimes when people, I mean, I guess it's called, like, I mean, let's call it what it is. Harassment, film harassment. Yeah. When somebody film harasses me, I'm like, nah, bro, I'm cool. Like, you actually made me not want to see it. Like, really, which, thank you. Thank you for ruining
it. I know I do that to other people, but, like, it's also, like, I don't know. It's I'm going to get defensive here, even though nobody's attacking me. I know I do it, but I feel like when I do it, I'm doing it with something that's not necessarily on people's radar. Like, I know I bug the shit out of a lot of people to watch, now I can't remember the name of the name, Mrs. Davis, on Peacock.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I need somebody else to watch this because it's so fucking weird and I'm so intrigued by it and I want to discuss it with somebody. Not because I'm just like, hey, that big thing that's coming out that's advertised everywhere, hey, are you going to watch that? You should watch that. You should definitely watch that. Like, if I was talking about The Mandalorian, or if I brought up The Mandalorian and somebody was like, yeah, I haven't watched it, I'd just feel like, okay. Well, it's pretty good. You might like it if you like Star Wars. But if I started talking about, I mean, Madam Web is a good example.
Yeah.
And they were like, what? That's dumb. I'd be like, you're right. It is dumb. You gotta watch it, though. If you haven't watched it, watch it. Because it's an interesting, stupid decision. Like...
Well, and it's also... Okay, so, like, let's be honest. Let's talk... Like, there's a difference between championing and doing what film bros do. Because, like, if you're telling me about a Nolan film, or you're telling me about a movie that's made close to half of, like it's going to make $1 billion at the box office and you're asking me to see it, that's not the same as talking about a movie that made $10 million at the box office and everybody is shitting on, saying that it's the worst movie ever made. No, it's not the worst movie ever made. I can show you 25 other films that are worse than that movie, and you would hate yourself, and you wouldn't even get through the first 20 minutes of that movie. But there's a difference. Like, you're right. Like, you know, championing something, which is, I feel like, what you like, what good film fans do, what you do, is different than, like I said, a film fan, like asking somebody if some, like harassing somebody over a film franchise, right? Like, and keep on like bugging them about it. It's like, yeah, it's not going away. It's not leaving the, it's not fucking leaving the universe, right? Yeah. Like, it's not gonna, it's gonna be on like four different streaming services. So, like, you know, just lay off and leave me alone about it. You know, the Nolans, the Villeneuve, they'll all be there when it's all said and done.
You saying that, let's take a detour. Did you see Judd Apatow's, like, dissertation? It wasn't a dissertation. I'm giving it too much credit. It was very much an aside, but his thing on, like, don't like, constantly rewatch things that are on streaming. Like, yes, his whole rail against that. And I'm just like... What?
I know. It's like, I don't know. Like, when creatives, like, you know that there's a problem with, okay, so this is what I took away from that weird rant. Okay. And mind you, like, let's not mistake, his daughter is a part of a streaming show that people are constantly watching. Like, people like have Euphoria got delayed indefinitely, which I feel is like the best possible thing to happen to all of those actresses. I'm using the word actresses because the actors in that movie, like that show, Jacob Elordi is the worst actor of all time. He is the very definition of looks and being tall and getting ahead in life. Like, he's the worst. Anywho, but his daughter is a part of one of those shows that people are like constantly like, you know, watching over and over again. He was in the last couple of seasons of The Office. He was one of the secret like cabal of writers and creatives that would come in and help out with The Office, the ultimate streaming repeat, show. Right?
If your argument, so like, if he were standing up there going, and his argument were like, mm-hmm. Look, we used to rely on syndication as like minor revenue streams for things that we were in or wrote or part of or whatever, and we're not. And I know that's part of the strike argument. And yeah. Now we're not really getting the revenue from people constantly rewatching old stuff. And not that it's you know, your job to keep them afloat forever, but. If it's an argument about all of that, like, I'm happy to sit and listen to that discussion. His argument is that because, like, it's a problem that Netflix can just lease, basically, TV shows for people to rewatch ad nauseum that makes them less inclined to make their own stuff.
Yes.
Number one, I'd say, well, that's bullshit because they're constantly buying and making their own shit. Mm-hmm. Like, ever since they got the revenue to do it, they have been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's like a fucking straw man to begin with.
It's already a snake eating itself. Yeah. Right?
Secondly, like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Like, since the advent of syndication and
exactly
these like endless fucking channels, that's what they've always done. Yep. That's what some of these networks are fucking built on. Nickelodeon was built on like kids shows, and here's all the shit you used to watch you adults, the kids have gone to bed. It's adult hour. Like, here's the old shows that you used to like. Well, so what the fuck are you talking about, Judd Apatow? Like,
Yeah,
and
it's.
also, fuck you, man. Like, you have the luxury to sit there and say that, and I like Judd Apatow, but like, you know what, man? Rewatching BoJack Horseman, which is a Netflix original for the umpteenth motherfucking time, is more helpful to my mental state than getting like wrapped up in some new bullshit show. Like, it literally helps me to be able to watch something that I know the outcome, and it's comforting. Like, some people might not get that, but when you're like an anxious, depressed person, like, there is a lot of comfort in that, of knowing, like, hey, even if it's not something that's happy, because BoJack's not really a happy show, like, I know what's gonna happen here, so. It's like a, like, flips a switch in your brain where you're not having to like think about things. You can just be like, well, and I mean, I've done it with Seinfeld since fucking Seinfeld was in syndication. I used to watch it endlessly when it was on like TBS for like 4 or 5 hours a day. I just rewatch it, you know? So.
Which to which like you know like they're like you know that's the thing is that sometimes like it's okay so like I'm not trying to insult BoJack Horseman, right? Like I'm not trying to say it's white noise, but some like for you it's the mental equivalent of white noise that's comforting, right? It's
Yeah,
comfort food.
100%.
Like I don't care what anybody says. It's like I have these shows that are comfort food, right? And yeah, I'm gonna watch them multiple times because that's the way
Specifically,
that
shows I fall asleep watching because
exactly.
it helps my brain. Like, I have like whatever imbalance or whatever in my head that I can't. Like, I can't sit in silence because my brain will just start running through things. But if I lay down and turn on, what's it been? I guess lately it's been Young Sheldon. Put on Young Sheldon. When that theme song goes, like, it's like those chemicals in my brain just start. I'm like, oh, it's bedtime.
Yeah,
And so I,
it's like the
yeah.
serotonin and shit. Yeah,
So I
the dopamine
stop
hit.
processing all of the shit either that happened to me or that I'm worried about tomorrow or anything. And my brain's just like, oh, bedtime, you know? And, but, so Netflix, I have it just, it'll play through. Like, it won't stop. But like, if I watch something on Hulu or a couple of these other ones that have, after like 2 or 3 hours, like, are you still watching? And they don't have the option to like just continue play. If it stops playing that show while I'm sleeping, for any, like, just say it stops, and 30 minutes later, I'm awake.
Yeah,
I'm up.
I can see that totally. Because it's the like I said, it's the white noise. Like it, I don't think that people truly understand like what that for even people like on the cusp of having true anxiety, because there are people that are anxious but don't have clinically diagnosed anxiety, right? And depression. Because and that's the evil thing about depression and anxiety is that they're kind of like peanut butter and chocolate. They go together with one
Yeah.
another. So when you're like if you've been diagnosed clinically like with clinical depression, more than likely you have anxiety because that's the way the brain works. People that are just a little anxious, that's not what we're talking about here, but the affectation is there, right? Like the need for, it's your brain's semblance and need for normalcy or some order so that it can ignore the inequities in itself, like the spinning drain, the constant drain of, like, you know, what ifs, right? And that's what something like The Office or anything that somebody like truly loves, like, you know, a show that they find comforting, it, what it helps with. And your brain does recognize it. Like, I know that some people are like, well, that's bullshit. Like, you can't just, like, you know, if it goes off, you just wake up. Like, no, that's a true thing.
It works almost the same way medication works, you know?
Yep.
Only the medication you can take with you, you can't always just, like, I'm feeling really, really stressed right now. Like, if I put on The Office, I'll feel better. That music will hit, and I'll just be like, oh, okay, everything will be all right. But, I mean, it does kind of work the same way. And, like, does it mean... There's a lot of things you can get into of, like, better ways to handle it. But, you know, not everybody has fucking access to that.
No.
And it's not drugs and alcohol. So... It is one of the tools that I use. And, like, just hearing somebody who literally has made those things say, well, you know, it's problematic that people rewatch these things on the level, you know, because it gives Netflix or whoever incentive to just buy programs instead of making new ones. And I'm like, you know, on the other, another argument is not saying we don't need new things, but like, we got a lot, man. There's a lot. There's a lot of stuff. So, well, and, you know, maybe it's okay if, you know, we're watching. It's such a straw man argument. I think a good example is a show that Netflix recently acquired, which I was championing months and months and months ago, because I discovered it on Amazon Prime, I think. It's called Louder Milk.
Yes. I have it on my watch.
It hit Netflix, so, yeah. And people were like, oh shit, this is great. Like, it was in the top, like, that's an old show, but yeah, that people are just now discovering, you know, it's like, it was just so, like, it kind of baffled me. And I know he wasn't like truly, truly railing against thing. He's kind of just pondering it, but like, the same time, it's like, okay, well, you know, I am sorry that you're not getting money for your new thing, but like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, you also haven't made anything recently that I'm like, this is great.
Yes. No, absolutely. Well, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, I'm sorry, but like, how can I put this nicely? There's no way to say this nicely. You know, every new show that comes out, like, there's like, a lot of it is like terrible people doing terrible shit, but it's not compelling. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I remember, like, okay, so like just as an example, like I recently saw this Western called Going South. It was directed by Jack Nicholson, and like it's a brand new discovery for me. It's a fucking wonderfully funny film, but it has terrible people and they're doing some terrible shit, but they're also grappling with like a moral compass. And it's also very compelling because, I'm going to tell you the cast for this and you will be like, what, how the fuck did I not know about this film? Right. Hold on a second. Let me go ahead and bring it up in my in my thing. Okay, so Jack Nicholson, the first, okay, so like introducing, this is who it introduces, Mary Steenburgen, Christopher Lloyd, Jim Belushi, Veronica Cartwright, Danny DeVito, Tracy Walter, Egg Bagley Jr. These are some of the people that are inhabiting this film. Like, I mean, like, people that, like, this is a Western and it's a comedy and it's about terrible people. Like, Jack Nicholson plays a robber who is so stupid that when he crosses the Mexican border and there's a posse after him, he starts laughing at them, flipping them off, and says, "Ha ha, you didn't get me. You can't cross this. You can't cross the fucking river." His horse dies on him, and the people still come over and drag his ass back to get hanged because he's a piece of shit. But in this town, there's a law that stipulates that if you, like, if a woman wants to marry you, like, they all have a chance to marry you because you're on the gallows. You have to, you're basically subservient to her. And it's about how Mary Steenburgen, like, literally, like, saves him from the gallows and, like, takes him to her little plot and land and what happens after that, right? And he's a terrible person. But here's the big part about this movie is that it's compelling to watch. And at its core, you can see that he's wrestling with these things. Oftentimes, like, at its core, a really great, like, show or movie will have terrible people doing things, right? Terrible things. It'll be compelled, but it's compelling because there's some sort of compass there for at least a couple of people that you can attach onto that are human. Part of the issue that I have with most of the shit that I'm seeing that comes out, there's no humanity there. Do you know what I mean? And so it's like, why the fuck am I going to watch some fucking Apatow thing where everybody's shitty and that's all there is to it, right? Like, there's no growth. There's no nothing. It's just people being shitty. Like, they take the worst parts of The Office, but not the good stuff, not the stuff that you kind of hang on to. It's like action movies, right? Like, my biggest problem with action movies is when it's all action. When it's just nothing but nonstop action. There's no story. Like the reason why I love James Cameron is not because he makes these big giant things with giant action. I love James Cameron because the humanity matters more in every single one of his films. The humanity of the characters matter more than the big giant mishigosh that's happening. Like, I just rewatched True Lies, and True Lies is about some really shitty characters doing some shitty stuff. But at its core, it's these people trying to find their way back to, like, at its core, it's about a marriage that's broken and them trying to figure out how to fix the marriage. Like, even at 12 or 13, I could kind of relate to that concept of humans trying to connect, right? Like, I'm sorry, Apatow, but I haven't seen anything from you in a long time since Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg left your shingle to make me think, oh yeah, I want to watch that new thing from Apatow, because there's no humanity there. It's just a bunch of dirtbags doing dirtbag things. I can watch that on 30 Netflix shows, you know? And so, like, for me, that's the reason why I go back to the shows that I go back to, is like the humanity and heart of it all. And, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to play your fucking game and watch something new just because it's fucking new and for your revenue stream.
Yeah.
I mean, I love creatives, but when, and it's not even like he's talking about other people. He's talking about himself.
Yeah, that's one of the things that blew me away is like, it is kind of railing against other people's creative stuff, but it's also like, dude, you've been so involved in so many super popular things for the last, like, 20 years. What are you talking about?
Exactly.
Like, this is your stuff.
Yeah, like, this is like literally Gary Shandling's show, like, which is not on anywhere, which I kind of like he's been around since the Gary Shandling show. Like, and then there's this whole complicit thing of, like, all you're talking about is your shit, right? Like, you're not even saying, like, oh, well, check out this thing from this new comedian. It's like, no, it's like, also, like, it
feels like one of those bands who's like, nobody wants to hear our new stuff. We just go on stage and everybody's like, play the hits.
The hits.
Like, yeah, man. I don't want to hear your new shit.
Yeah, he's okay. So, like,
I like your old, like, shit.
Yeah, it's not like he's like, okay, so like Madonna, like, was totally into playing her hits, right? She loved it. She wanted to do it. Like, she's done a whole tour around it, right? Like, this motherfucker is like,
I mean, I sorry, think that's Scott, what Taylor Scott Swift Phillips, was doing.
Exactly. But okay, so like, here's like, okay, so like, sorry, Scott Phillips, I love the boss, but this motherfucker sitting there, I won't play the new stuff. The new stuff is the best stuff. No, it's not, boss. No, it's not, Springsteen, aka the Wrath of Khan.
Look, you fucking crazy. If I go see Bruce Springsteen, I want to hear Glory Days and Born in the USA. Like, that's what I want to hear.
Exactly. I'm on fire.
I want to hear the Streets of Philadelphia.
Yes, exactly. You know, play the hits, Monkey Organ Grinder guy. You fucking asshole. I don't want to hear your fucking, like, it's like Judd Apatow. It's like the newest comic he works with is Pete Davidson. And yeah, it's like, Pete Davidson is still like 35 years old and like bitten to rehab more than anybody else. I mean, like, the guy's basically 42 years old, right? Like a recovering addict. Like, that's the thing I don't get. Like, it's like, you're not championing anybody. Like, all you do is sit there and, like, talk about the glory days, like The Who or like Led Zeppelin, right? When they all get together. Like, I don't want to play the, I want to play the new stuff. Shut up. Shut up, old white man. Play the hits. Play the hits. I'm sorry, but you know what? It's like, for so long, I've had to put up with your bullshit. No, it doesn't work like that. I'm sorry. You know, yeah, we're in the control of our own destiny. I hate when, like, that's the bigger thing. That's the bigger point for me, is that officially Judd Apatow has lost sight of everything. Like, he has. Like, he doesn't understand what's important. Like, you've had your shot for fucking 40 years. For 40 years. You've worked with Gary Shandling. You've worked with all the tops of comedy, right? And you kind of helped some white people, some of your kind, to move up the ladder. But, like, what have you done other than to champion champions? Like, it really kind of pissed me off. I didn't realize how much it pissed me off, but I ignored it because I didn't want to be pissed off already in a week that I've been kind of, like, you know. But you're right. You're 100% right. He's like, he doesn't understand. Like, that's how you know someone's lost, when they don't understand the first thing about people in psychology and why they do things that they do.
And if it, like I said, if his arguments were anything remotely concerning, like, the monetary end of things, I would be like, oh yeah, I mean, okay, you know, like, I hated the Metallica versus Napster thing back in the day, but, like, I do understand it from, like, a, you kind of taking money out of my pocket here. Like, yeah, you know, like, could you just go buy it? Like, I understand that argument. Like, yes. So, and even if it was like a, hey, maybe we should stop, like, en masse supporting these streaming services, that argument I understand as well. I don't understand, like, oh, well, they won't make new stuff if you, all you do is rewatch the old stuff. Like, well, you know what, man? There's not a lot of new things that I like as much as the old things. So, yeah, like, maybe y'all should be better at making new things, you know?
Exactly. Be adept and skilled. Learn your audience. Like, okay, so, like, for a creative that's been around for a long time, that's, like, the paragon of what I feel, like, what we're talking about, and the antithesis of what we're talking about with Judd Apatow, is Michael Schur. Think about Michael Schur and everything that he's done. Like, he's always pushing himself to do something different, but it's done in a style that's inclusive.
Yeah, and he,
but it doesn't feel inclusive.
He's an office guy. Like, he came from the office. He's
Greg Daniels.
From that, yeah.
Yeah,
he's from that
Greg
whole
Daniels.
School.
And so. Who did he learn? Who did Greg Daniels learn from? The GOAT, Mike Judge. And even Mike Judge knows play the hits, right? Like he went back to Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
Like, he literally went back to Beavis and Butthead, even though he said that he would never do that. But it's also understanding your audience, right?
Yeah.
And everything that I've heard about, like, Judd Daniels and Schur is they're constantly looking for new talent to bring in, like, new voices, because they know that that's the apex of what you do in any kind of, like, filmmaking enterprise or like long-term storytelling, right? And that's kind of the reason why, like, things like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Good Place, The Office, King of the Hill, Beavis and Butthead, this is why they endured, is because for their streak, they constantly brought in new voices.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing to say, because all I see is, oh, the fucking multimillionaire is fucking pissed off because his new stuff that could have made him more revenue stream isn't taking off. You know what I have to say about that? Fuck and you, buddy. Seriously? Go back to, go back to stoner comedies.
It makes me think of somebody. So, like, I know he's polarizing. We've talked about him before. Yep. But, like, a guy like Kevin Smith,
who
knows his audience, makes stuff for his audience, markets it specifically to his audience, like, is not saying things like, well, people rewatch old stuff, so nobody wants to buy my shit anymore. He's just like, well, the people that like my shit will buy my shit, so I'm only going to sell my shit to the people that like my shit. Like, he's done with the, like, I'm trying to reach a bigger audience. Like, I in that sense, I think it was the Judd Apatow model that broke him. He was like, oh, I got a lot of these Judd Apatow people. I'm making this movie, this Zach and Mary movie. Like, I've got the biggest people on the planet at the time in this movie. It's going to do gangbusters. I'm going to reach a new stratosphere. And what he realizes is, like, oh, no, still only the people that want to see my shit came to see my shit. So, like, why am I, like, constantly trying to reach out to get a bigger piece of something when I can just be satisfied with the piece that I have? Like, it does me just fine. Now, I mean, I think he's made some probably wrong-headed financial decisions in the last few years, buying a movie theater. you're kind of like, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but buying a theater and trying to run it when theaters are in massive decline seems like poor financial decisions. But that was the decision he made with his heart and has nothing to do with this. But like, Apatow could easily follow that and be like, oh, well, there are people that like my stuff, so I'm gonna make my stuff and sell it to the people that like my stuff. You know, he could go on tour, with
or
his movies, and you, like Kevin Smith does. Like, if that's what your argument is, it's so wrong here.
It really is. And you know what? Like, okay, so to take something from a person that's been very canceled, but his concept was really great, which was the Louis C.K. model of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to make this thing, and you can go onto the site, and you can pay, you're going to pay $1 a thing for it. And the episodes could be an hour long. They could be 20 minutes. They could be 90 minutes. But it's all in service of like, you're paying X number of dollars per episode, no matter what the length is. And like for his like weird barbershop thing, it was a huge hit for him from everything I heard, like literally made him, after everything was paid for, after like everything was said and done, he made millions of dollars off of that thing that only the hardcore Louis C.K. fans knew about.
Yeah.
Right. Same thing with Kevin Smith. I mean, he could go that way. I mean, Judd Apatow could go that way. Right. Like, you want to do something, then do it. Like, don't.
Why do you want Netflix's money? Like, I understand you want money to make your stuff, but like, I don't know, man. Aren't they the kind of the enemy? So.
I mean, it's also like, okay, so like let's be honest here. The part of the reason why it probably is that is because it's the comfortableness of that of that process, right? Because let's be honest here, if you do the Louis C.K. model or you do the Kevin Smith model, guess what? You're out of your comfort zone. And you know what that also is? Like, let's be honest, it's 20 times more work. We know.
I was about to say, it's a lot more fucking work. Like, that's, say what you want about Smith, but like, the motherfucker, like, he works more than any stone. Well, he stopped smoking, but even when he was smoking, he was working more than any stoner should, that you would ever think that they would work. The motherfucker was always working. He was doing, like, he does, like, 8 podcasts a fucking month, running a theater, making movies, like constantly. He was always tweeting or whatever about what project he was writing next, like, and touring with his stuff. You know, I think part of owning the theater was him. Like, oh, if I have a place to put all these things, maybe I won't have to tour so much. You know, and now that's more work. Now he's not touring as much as he is like, oh, every other week they're having like these little mini film festivals or like reunion screenings or and not just of his stuff, of all these other things. And he is really doing the work. And, you know, maybe that is the bigger thing is like, you want the Judd Apatow doesn't, like, he doesn't want to do that work. And I don't blame him. I don't want to do that work either. Like, I would love to be successfully creative, but also I'm lazy as shit, man. I don't know that I have the drive to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's tough. Like, you know, people want to give him a lot of shit, right? Like, they want to give Smith a lot of shit, but I will say this much. Like, that dude works, I think that dude works harder than anybody else out there. Like, he really does. He really
works
one of the hardest
hard working. At being mediocre.
But you know what? He makes money. Like, let's be honest. Like, he makes money. Like, he may not, like, we don't know, like, that's the thing is that we don't honestly know how much he makes, but I can guarantee you, like, it's enough to keep everything open and pay him and pay his people. I mean, plus also additionally, let's be honest, like, he's always been a raconteur, right? So, like, his podcast empire, like, it makes sense to me that it far overshadows anything he does in film now. Yeah. Like, it really does. Like, because his loquacious nature is built for podcast. His opinionated opinions are made for podcast. And so, like I know that more than a few people have told me they compare him, and I feel it's wrong in the way that I feel like they're digging at him, but it's right in the volume it speaks, is that, like, people can like say, oh, well, he's like the pop culture cinematic version of Joe Rogan, to which I say, no, he's not as crass and shitty as Rogan is. Yeah, like, in not, any way, shape, or form.
He's not ever trying to sell anything except his shit.
Exactly. He's not trying to sell you like brain mushroom coffee, fucking whatever, like, you know, raw meat, like a raw meat fucking, like whatever, like, you know, the stupid shit that the brainless shit that Rogan sells. It's just toxic crap. But the reach and the grasp he has on his audience is the same as Rogan. Like, and that's a powerful thing. Like, the way that he approaches things, what he says on his podcast, which I feel sometimes is probably antithetical to his audience, the, you know, the Red Hook or whatever you want to call them, gang of people that have grown up with him since Clerks, right? Like, this dude, like the funniest part is that this dude is still super, super blue, Democrat. Like, loves freedom of speech and everything, right? But you know his audience is nothing like that. And that tells you how far down and how graspy he is with his audience, that he can say whatever he wants on his podcast and they'll give him shit, but it's never like they'll leave him. And that's crazy. And that tells you, like, and here's the big difference between, like, everybody and Kevin Smith, is that he cares about his audience. Like, he truly does care. Like, it may be crass. There may be, like, you know, like, some of his films may be just crass bids for more money, but he cares about his audience to give them what they want. And that's the difference, right? Like, between, like, most people, is that they're not willing to give, like, Judd Apatow doesn't want to fucking give you what the audience wants. And I'm not saying that he has to, but you know what? Don't bitch about
when people don't show up for it.
Yeah.
If you're going to do your thing, don't, like, you have to accept that sometimes that thing is not going to be for everybody. So
Exactly. So, yeah. So, like, I feel like this is like a perfect segue into, you know, something that's very much like, you know, audience wanted it and they fucking got it. But we've gotten it, and three episodes in, I mean, we haven't talked about X-Men 97, but I feel like that's a kind of a perfect stage to kind of, like, that was a primer stage for talking about something that, like, I don't even know how it came about. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a weird fucking, like, thing to do. Go ahead.
I feel like, so Disney gets Fox and they're like, okay, good. Now we have the X-Men. Let's do something with the X-Men. But you can't immediately add them to the film franchises. Like, there's all this, like, you know, juggling that needs to be done for that. And Kevin Feige is obviously working on it. We've seen bits and pieces. And of course, you know, you've got to do the Deadpool 3.
Yes.
So Disney's sitting there going, like, but we have all of this. We have to do something with the X-Men. Like, what can we do that isn't A, starting a new continuity for these characters? Like, because we don't want to step on the toes of what Feige and company will do. And B, will also be successful. And somebody's like, well, what about an animated series? Like, and then you look at the X-Men animated series. Well, the last one was Wolverine and the X-Men, and it was great, but it was not super successful. And then before that, it was X-Men Evolution, which was also great and semi-successful. And then somebody's like, well, what if we just keep making from the old series? Like, it has to just be one of those, like, throwing ideas around the room.
And what sticks, right?
Yeah, and somebody's just like, oh, no, we should absolutely do that. Like, there's no reason we can't do that, right? Mm-hmm. You know? And here we are a couple of years later, like, because they've been talking about this for a while.
Yes.
And we have X-Men 97, which picks up where the original X-Men, the animated series, pretty much just left off. And we are now three episodes in, and I'm loving it, but also see like how kind of goofy all of it is. But like if you go back and rewatch X-Men the animated series, some of it's pretty goofy.
Well, yeah. Well, like, luckily, I like over the last year, I've been watching the X-Men the animated series when I go to bed. Like, I'll like once a week, I'll watch a couple of episodes, right? And it got me through the five seasons, so that prepped me for how soap opery, how soap opery it is.
Melodramatic.
Yeah, melodramatic. Like, it's like a Telemundo, like it's like a telenovela. Like it's very wild because like nobody ever dies, everybody comes back, and that's like the whole soap opera part about it. But it's exactly okay. So like it's born out of a time where like if you read the comics at the time, if you read what Claremont and Jim Lee were doing during that time frame, where they did that like in the Uncanny X-Men. And the X-Men run that they did together, it's very much this, like it's very much so this kind of overwrought, melodramatic people sleeping with other people. I mean, that's the whole like that's the whole thing, right? Like that's where the memes come from, like the Wolverine meme and shit. But it was more than that, right? Like everybody was like there was so much drama that's beyond just the plots, like whatever the plots were. Like there was always something, like somebody was hooking up with somebody that they shouldn't have, or quote unquote they shouldn't have. And what I love about the 97 show is that it literally doesn't miss a step. Like I watched the last couple of episodes before the last couple of episodes of the original before I watched the first two, and it was thankfully I did that because it in like there's no misstep here. Like this is the same show. It's just it's done now and it's got a better animation style, but only slightly. I mean, like that was the funniest thing to me
It's a
about this
more
all is that,
modern style for sure.
yeah, but it's still jaunty and they make it purposely jaunty, right? Like all of the posing and stuff, like that's the thing that I love the most about the animated series is that there's so many purposeful, like it's what Wesley Snipes did so well in the Blade series, where he ended on a pose or he began on a pose that was so comic book, but it didn't look forced, right? Like that's what they did in this show, is that there was always like these weird poses that were
It
like
looked like
covers.
panels from a comic book, yeah.
Exactly. Very much so. So I really kind of like I was jiving, like I was already jiving with the show, and so you adding in this new series, it's kind of wild, right? Like that, for me at least, it doesn't miss a step of what's so fun about. Like this is not great. Again, this is not a like a home run. This is like a solid double, right? This is a standing double, which I am so okay with. Because give me
Yeah,
this. Okay.
it's Saturday morning cartoons. It's not
Yes.
like, people, but probably for us, Batman the Animated Series is the pinnacle of like,
Yes.
oh shit, this can be art and entertainment, as
Yeah.
far as like animated TV shows go. But like, that's an outlier, most cartoons are just like, yeah, like I really enjoy watching that. And X-Men's like that. Like it captures what's so fun about these characters and also what is important about the characters, Like they do tackle the heavier themes. Maybe not as in depth as I would want them to. Like I always go back to the it's in the first few episodes of the first season of the show. The Genosha arc, the
Yes.
island where they go and they get to college. That's actually where Cable gets introduced into the show. And that it's like two episodes, and it's still not as like deep as it could be. It's very surface level stuff. And this season or this new series is also doing that. It's doing it very surface level. Adult me really wishes they get more in depth, but I also understand that like they want to do a lot of story, you know? And so some of these things that would take six issues in a comic book, they're wrapping up in 22 minutes, you know?
Yes, they're definitely okay. So, like, the thing is that they're definitely doing single episodes, but I had done like what worried me was that they weren't going to do multi-part arcs, but having read some stuff about like the writer's room and stuff, this is all to like kind of set the stage for multi-arc stuff. So like your worry about it, they definitely there's definitely multi-arcs happening, and they're going to happen. So which gives me hope, right? Like which gives me hope, even though like this production was tumultuous to say the least. I mean, you've heard about this whole thing with the showrunner DeMeo and what they did when they found out that he had a certain kind of a social media account, which I find wild, which upended a lot of stuff. But needless to say, it's interesting how, because that was my first thing was like, oh, are they just going to do one-offs? It's like you want them to go, I don't know if it's deeper, but like you want them to kind of like do what they did with the animated series, right? Like, 'cause they did that right off the bat. Like they started with a mythologized or like a, what do they call it? Serialized story. Ongoing thing. But from everything I've heard, that is going to be something that happens. What do you think of what do you think of like the things that they're doing? Because it very much feels to me, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, it's still staying within the Chris Claremont
Oh, for sure. For
area
sure.
of writing,
Like
right?
I don't think they branched out past any like Cable is the one thing that I could probably point to. And that's still Claremont era. It wasn't a
Yeah.
Claremont character, but that's the one thing I'd probably point to and say that's a little bit more modern. But like the rest of it is still in that Claremont and Lee kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't gotten into the Scott Lobdell of it all.
Yeah.
which is fine. I like his stuff too. Yeah, we haven't branched out past that. And like it's funny that they're tackling stories that, I mean, when I first started reading comics, like
Yeah.
those stories, they weren't history, but they were kind of like almost not ancient history, but definitely like, oh, that's something that happened 3 or 4 years ago. When I started reading comics in the early
Yes.
90s, you know, this was stuff that was happening in the 80s. Like, Madeline Pryor is a character who is still relevant today, but not in the same way that she was. Like, it's funny. She was written, like, I do like Claremont. Claremont, like a lot of writers, steals.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they do. But he does it on a level like he's like the George Lucas of comics. Like he was stealing whole cloth, and like there's the whole brood in the comics, right? Like, and the brood are literally, they look like xenomorphs. Like
They really do.
it's insane how much they are like aliens. So Madeline Pryor, like that whole arc in the comics is a fucking Hitchcock movie. Like it is Vertigo.
Yeah, it really is. Which, like, that's like, you bringing that up is kind of great because it's like, it's so like this series is like the snake eating itself in the best possible way because it's recontextualizing things, right? It's not taking things like it is taking things wholesale from certain runs, right? Like, at least it appears that way. We're gonna really truly find out as it like goes through this 10 episode series to see where they end up. But it's like the whole thing with like Storm losing her powers is like literally something that I had, like, when I started reading comics, I had to go back a couple of years because I never read that storyline.
Right.
And it's like an old, like, it is very much so an old storyline, right? Like you were saying, like, even when I was reading, it was old. Like this, the, like, I love the, like, they've brought the Magneto Rogue situation back because that's also another
Yeah,
one
which
that's
is
from.
and one fans don't necessarily like, especially fans of
No.
this series, because that like the Gambit Rogue thing became very, very like prominent in the early 90s, and this series was a big part of like creating that dynamic. And so the Rogue Magneto possible romance thing is not something that fans necessarily love. I do like that they're doing it as like not as a fuck you, but just as a like, yeah, we're gonna antagonize you a little bit. Like, you're not gonna like this storyline because it you these are two characters you don't necessarily want to see together, you know?
But I'll be the first one to say, like, making a cuckold out of Gambit and making him a thirst trap, like, fuck boy is kind of a brilliant stroke because literally that's what he is in, like, the first, like, I often, like, I kept on going back to the first 12 issues of Jim Lee's X-Men, like X-Men 1 through 12. And literally that's what he is. Like, if you really read those comic books, which I feel like most people didn't, they collected them, but they never read them, you'd find that Gambit is never a good person. Like, he's never been a good, like, I love the fact that they took the dumb version of him, right? Like the good looking, like, oh, I'm Playboy, right? But then it's like what people hate, like, they hated the fact that Magneto just had this thing with Rogue, right? I like that they're leaning into that. I like that they're, like, doing stuff that maybe fandom would not like. Like, I feel like the whole cloning of Jean, which is also something that they've taken from, like, how many storylines were there of Jean being either cloned or alternate reality Jean just to
I mean,
go
at
back to
this point,
Phoenix?
I don't even know at this point. The clone thing, like that's definite. That was a huge one. It's a little, and that's another thing the series does is it plays with the continuity. Everything isn't happening in the order that it happens in the books. Like Madeline Pryor is, which. We do get like, oh, the Jean that has the baby is not the Jean, real Jean. She was a clone. That's Madeline. Like that is here, but they never thought she was Jean. They always thought she was Madeline Pryor. She was always Madeline Pryor. It's just that they found out she was a clone of Jean. That's why she looks just like Jean. But yeah, there's this whole story in the books when Scott meets her, like everybody's just like, holy shit, you look just like Jean Grey. Like, how was this possible? And you find out later that, oh, Sinister clone Jean, and it is the whole thing. Like, him, Nathan being infected with the techno-organic virus and having to be sent to the future, that is something that happens in the comics. It doesn't happen like this, but, like, no. I like that they take what they have, try to, like, fit bits of the comic continuity into it and be like, oh, we have Bishop. He has been stranded in the past. We have this storyline. How do we get Nathan into the future to have him become a future freedom fighter to then travel back to the past to help save everybody in Genosha as Cable? Spoilers. We have Bishop. Bishop can fix his time thing and go into the future. Like, I like that they have written themselves into a corner, like, to some degree, like, going way, way back. The show would constantly write itself into a corner and then find creative ways that are still kind of in the continuity to get out of it. You know, like, the Cable thing in the original series, like, as literally that's my favorite character. I still struggle when I watch those episodes because I'm like, this is not the way this happened, and it doesn't make any fucking sense why he's here.
Yes.
But it is what it is, and I like that they're being creative in how to get out of it. Like, we may get into further stuff with Madeline. I imagine we will.
Yes.
Because she kind of just goes off and is like, I need to like, be away from here kind of thing. But there's a whole fucking arc in the comics where she still has her son, and like, through Sinister's manipulations, like, all of this stuff, she becomes the Goblin Queen and creates literal hell on Earth, and all of that is really kind of just glossed over here.
Like, it's an action scene. It's literally an action scene. Like, that's literally what happens in the third episode, you know?
I'm like, oh, man, I thought we were going to get a whole Inferno arc, and it's like a minute of the episode.
Though, don't, I almost feel like it's a call, but I feel like there's going to be something else that's going to happen. Like, she's not, like, we're not finished, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
And especially with Sinister, like, what I find interesting about this is, again, it's the snake eating itself, because it's taking storylines that we are already very, like, if you've watched the animated series within the last year or so, it's very much so talking about certain things that were longstanding things, like the Genosha stuff, like Magneto going and saying that, like, this is what he wants. Like, he wants, like, they put that, like, you know, they dangle that whole thing of Genosha being a part of the UN, which is, like, there's a huge Genosha, like, storyline throughout, like you constantly return to that particular area of the X-Men lore in the series, in the TV series. So it makes complete sense to me that they would go back and kind of, like, put their hooks into this, because that's where they pulled so much of their, like, oh, let's reset everything. How do we do that? Let's go back to Genosha and do something weird. Like, let's give Professor X the ability to walk, but he doesn't have his powers anymore. Or let's give a team up between Magneto and Charles, and they have to save the X-Men. Like, there was always something where they had to go back to Genosha, and it felt like a reset, right? Like, because, again, either they walked themselves into a corner, or they finished a storyline where, like, it seems like world peace was attained, and they had to figure out a way to fuck it all up. It feels like it. Like, these first three episodes are setting the stage for things. It's almost like, okay, so we know that you love the show, but we know that you're not going to invest the time to watch the 20 hours of TV that's required to get yourself caught up, right?
So if anybody's listening to this and wants to get caught up, in lieu of watching all of that, if you go to is it they're called is it New Rock Stars? I think that's what the group is
Yeah.
called. If you go
Yeah.
to their YouTube channel and just look for X-Men, the animated series videos, there is a 90-minute or so video that basically
Yes.
breaks down every single episode of the series in about a minute or so, like per episode, and kind of gives you the highlights of like, here's what you need to know. It was very, very helpful in kind of getting caught up without feeling like I had to, like most of the series I remember. Some of it is, kind of fuzzy, especially later episodes. But yeah, it's probably the best catch up video that I saw. But yeah, there's probably gonna be a lot of things that come back. They're gonna be like, oh yeah, okay. But the X-Men was always good for that. Like there was always like dangling plot threads that either would eventually get resolved or like would never come up at all.
Yes.
The third Summers brother was a big one for a long time.
Yes, it was.
And the resolution was still fucking stupid. Thank you, Joss Whedon.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, like, the less we talk about that fool, the better. But overall, how do you feel like after the first three episodes?
I'm enjoying it. I
Okay.
am really, really digging the angles they're going with almost everyone. This is the show that made me a fan of Wolverine as a character. I was never that big of a Wolverine guy, but like I hate Cyclops so much.
I mean, like, okay, can we give a special shout out to Ray Chase, who's the voice actor that's taking over from Norm Spencer? Like, because he died, I think, in 2020 or 2021 or something like that. Like, and RIP to Norm Spencer, who was a great animator. Like, I mean, you and I both share this love of voice actors, like because they're such a vital component of animated series or animated, like, animation in general. But Ray Chase gets Scott Summers. He gets the dick, the whole prickish persona. And he sounds a lot like Norm Spencer, with his delivery. And I do love the fact that they've brought back where they could, they brought back everybody that was their role, right? Yeah, man, Scott Summers such a dick. Though, how could you not like, I mean, I have to ask, the moment with the skydiving and like, his power beam charge up and landing. I mean, you have to admit that's kind of
It's real,
badass.
yeah, it's very cool. Like
Yeah.
it's so weird. Like it's a love hate thing. Like
Yes.
it's not like I hate Cyclops and I wish he was never part of the team and I never want to see him. I'm glad he's there, but I just like I like it when he gets his comeuppance. I really, really do. I mean, it happens in the first few episodes of the original series. Wolverine punching Cyclops, getting pissed, and then making like ripping the roof off of his car, like is one of the best things ever. Just
Yeah.
ever. Like it sucks that they thought Morph died, but like just him walking off that jet, walking over to Cyclops and just ray this punching him in the gut. Like you're lucky the claws weren't out, man.
Yep.
I fucking love it. And this show, like it is like hanging on to a lot of that. It's not quite the same level, but like it's been years. Like even in the continuity of the show, it's been years at this point. So they have more of a working love-hate relationship.
Yes. No, definitely.
I'm digging
Definitely.
Morph I really, really like
Yes.
that they've got him on the team. Bishop was the one I was like, why the fuck did they still write this character to be here? And it wasn't until the last episode where I was like,
Yes, with the
oh,
virus.
okay. When they were like, oh, wait, is Bishop still stranded here? Oh, good. We can do the whole take Nathan into the future storyline with Bishop. Like, I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. Because, like, very, very easily, Bishop was a character you could have been like, yeah, he went back to the future, like at some point, or just not even addressed it. You just assume he made it back to the future. But I'm really interested in where the Storm storyline's going. I think it's funny. I was talking about how they seem to like really gloss over swaths of
Yeah.
plot from the comics. But they have gone really, really in depth on like this thing with Storm and her losing her powers. Like it's very focused. Like they're focused on that thing. Like, so
Well,
I
and then,
appreciate that.
well, and then also, like, you get Forge, like, which is like wild to me, like, that you're gonna do that storyline. Like, you're gonna go that way with it,
But
and
it's funny because in the original series, you do meet Forge, but you don't meet him
yes.
until he's alive with Bishop in Bishop's future. He helps create or helps at least fix the time machine that sends Bishop back into the past. So
Yes.
it's interesting to see this young version of the character and how they might possibly like reconcile those two things. Like if it's different and that Forge in the future doesn't exist anymore, or like it's there's a lot of opportunity there, and it is like, not to keep hitting your point, but it's very, very much like what Claremont would do, was like just introduce, like take the characters all over the place, introduce all these story elements, and then maybe things would get resolved, maybe they wouldn't. Like it was very much like a soap opera. I'm a little not worried. I don't know how to put it, but like the Executioner storyline, like
Yes.
I thought it was good, but like where do you go from there with that?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to seem like a recycle of certain storylines that they already, and maybe that's just their point, is to do the whole, like, every season has the storyline of, like, mutants are so close to being equal citizenship, and then something happens to fuck it all up. And it feels like Executioner, like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh shit, this is the storyline they're gonna do, where mutants almost get it, but then they don't. And whatever happens, happens to separate the humans, and like, it's just an excuse for humans to like be shitty human be like to be exactly what they are, shitty, right? And it just feels like a waste of a, like, if it's not done properly, it feels like a waste of a very interesting piece of X-Men lore and X-Men characters. But again, I don't know, because like, it's so early in the run of this show, and how they, like you said, like, I think you put it right on the dot, is that they are using Claremont as an homage to where he took things and put it into the, like, as Arnold used to love to say, put us the into the meat grinder, and then it comes out something completely different, right? It's a different kind of sausage. And I'm hoping that that's the case, and I don't want to see like the normal standard things, but I don't know, man. It's one of those things where you're like, ugh, it could go really wrong. Let's just wait and see. I mean, it's just like the Boulevard Trash stuff. Like, you kind of bring it up, and it's kind of there, And yeah. that's something that constantly comes back in the series.
Yeah, I was about to say, his Sentinels. It kept coming back. And
yeah,
like, it's funny. I think X-Men did that really, really well. And then the Spider-Man series tried to do something similar with Alistair Smythe and the Spider-Slayers. And
yeah.
maybe it's just because I don't love Spidey as much as I absolutely love X-Men. But, like, the Spider-Slayer shit, I was, like, so... I would get so disgusted. It's like, oh, my God, I don't care. Like, but, like, the Sentinel stuff and the Trask and Gyrick and all of that, like, I never really got tired of it, but also felt like they were never around truly long enough for me to get super tired of it. Like, they would only show up every now and then. And I get the feeling we're probably going to get some more of that, which I'm fine with. Like, the Sentinels are a thing that literally current X-Men comics, Sentinels are still a thing. Like, so
are
much
you fucking kidding me?
They're so in the current run, this organization called Orcus basically, against his will, Tony Stark's Stark company went into production on Sentinels. So there are these massive Sentinels with basically Iron Man tech.
Okay.
It's really, really interesting.
Okay, that is wild. Like, you know, to be perfectly honest, that sounds wild. Okay, well, you know.
So I think that we'll see some Sentinel storylines. I know they have 2 seasons written. So I can't imagine it's gonna just stick to those 2 seasons. I honestly would love for this show to be so successful that not only do we get even more seasons, but we get some spinoff stuff too. Like, give this Wolverine his own show. Like, let me see those storylines. I would like to see them go and pull in modern characters, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, like, that would be great. Like, if they can do that, or maybe do a Battlestar Galactica, like the modern Battlestar Galactica, and do the time jump, and do like a 10-year time jump, so that we could reset. Like, maybe doing like the, like, every year you jump ahead a little bit to give us some additional people that you can kind of mix into the situation. It would be great.
I gotta tell you, it's really weird that I understand why they introduced Roberto.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. You kind of need a fellow, like, young person for Jubilee to kind of pal around with, but exactly. Also, I'm such a New Mutants guy that, like, I got really excited at the prospect of all that. And, like, I was like, oh, are we going to get some more of that? I'm sure it's coming, because that's the whole thing in the book. But Xavier did have those students, but, like, Magneto comes in, takes over the school. There's new students. He's the headmaster. Like, it is a whole thing in the books. They're doing it a little bit different, but yeah, I'm excited to see those characters, even though we've already seen a lot of them in the continuity already. Like, I'm pretty sure Cannonball has come, not featured in an episode, but I'm pretty sure we've seen him. Maybe seen Wolfsbane. I can't remember. I know we've seen Feral, which is weird because she's such a 90s character. I'm excited for what this show could be, but if it just winds up being this fun little, like, until we can have X-Men proper live action, we have this, I'm okay with that too.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, it's a good starting point. Like, I think that, like, overall, like I agree with what you're saying, which is that it's a good starting point to see where we can go with the X-Men now that they're back in the Marvel universe. Like, it's a smart move, right? Like,
Yeah.
give us something that we already know and recontextualize it to kind of get us prepared for the recontextualization.
And it has been successful enough, apparently, that it could just be a rumor, but that the powers that be at Disney Plus are like, well, maybe we could do this with the Spider-Man show too.
Yes. No,
So.
absolutely. Like that's what the rumor is that like, you know, that the not the one that was from like the 2016 version, but the 1994 version that everybody grew up with is the one that they're talking about rebooting. Which again, like that's actually kind of an interesting like notion, right? I'm digging it. Like I'm like it's a good start. Like, you know, and I know that people hate hearing that, but I mean, what else do you want me to say? Like, what else do you want us to say that it's perfect? No, it's nowhere near perfect. Like, you like it, is it as beloved as the original animated series? No, because we've had 30 fucking years with it. So calm down, people. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's funny because like part of me would like to see a brand new X-Men animated series, see a new take on all this. And I mean, we've gotten it before, and I'm gonna blaspheme here. X-Men Evolution for me is the best X-Men series. Like I think that show
Okay.
is fucking like solid gold beginning to end. And if you asked me like which show would you want more episodes of, it would be X-Men Evolution.
Okay.
But like it's funny, they try to do newer stuff like animated form, and like younger audiences just don't really grab onto it, and older audiences are just like, well, it's not as good as the old stuff. So going back to the well, like they might not grab as many younger audience members as like some people would think, but it's certainly like almost everybody I work with, it's like, did y'all know that they're continuing the X-Men show from when we were kids? Like, or have you seen it? Or like, people at my work are talking about this. You know, I do work with people that do fall on the nerdier side of things. They watch anime, stuff like that. But like, a new X-Men cartoon would not be on their radar. An X-Men cartoon that picks up where the X-Men cartoon that they loved as a kid left off,
That's
definitely
the
on their
hook.
radar.
Yeah, that like right? Like that's the hook, right? Like it's the trading in your childhood. Like, you know,
Yeah.
it's the short like all it comes down to is like, is it worth my time? Like, ultimately, they're being smart. Like, you know, we like it's a very tricky thing nowadays, right? Like, to me at least, that like you're trying to get the most audience for your buck, especially when it's like these streamers and stuff. And so it does make sense to me that they would go back to this over X-Men Evolution. Like, and you are right. Like, I do distinctly remember like Evolution was a much better written show, like from, you know, from
Better
head to
animated
toe,
too.
and better animated. And here's the wild thing, guys, is that it has some of the same voice actors as X-Men the Animated Series does. So, you know, the cross-pollination of it all, like they kept they like that's the thing about animation is that they have this kind of weird, like people that don't watch animation, they have this weird connective tissue.
Yeah.
Even though they're
Ninja
completely
Turtles
done.
is one that has always, like, through every iteration, like there's
Yeah.
always this weird offhanded connection to the previous iteration.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Same
it's
with
strange.
it really is. It really is. But at the same time, it makes sense because if you think about different various what's the like different various fans of animation, like the thing that links a lot of times often links things is are the actors, like are the voice actors, right? Like yeah. It's the thing that hooks you and gets you into like the older audience, not the younger. The kids don't care. Like maybe some like forward thinking like pop culture like nerdy nerds that are eventually like us when we were kids, right? Like that eventually become podcasters and reviewers will care about this stuff, but it's the older generation that has that familiarity with the voice, so that when you watch the Avengers and then you watch say Spider-Man and an Avenger shows up, the same voice is there, even if it's 2 or 3 years later, the same voice shows up. And so it's not so discombobulated, it's just enough of like a connective tissue to make everything kind of work, even yeah. though the style might be different, the purpose might be different. It's always like there's small, like especially in the Marvel animated series, there's always this small connective tissue with who they are, like in. And the funny thing is that like whoever plays Tony Stark for like, you know, 5 years, he plays Tony Stark for 5 years, right? Like there's no changeover in that voice. Or if you're lucky enough to be like Wolverine, literally seems like every fucking, like every iteration is what's his name? I can't even think of his name. Cal. Jesus, who's the guy from the animated series? I can't think of his, the voice actor name, but it literally is him, right? Like, and not anybody else. Like, and that's okay. And I like that. I like that continuity, but also like, you know, like you know, like it would be kind of nice to see like them take on different things if this is successful, like you said. Like yeah. not necessarily reboots, like maybe legacy, like I guess like this is the, for me, like this is the kind of legacy sequel that I'm okay with. Like it works, right? It's wing as the way that it should, and at the end of the day, it's going to be something that will eventually transmute. If it's as good as the first series or even X-Men Evolution, it's going to transmorph itself into something entirely different by the end, and that's what I'm for. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, I'm with you. Speaking of animated things, so I know we talking before we started recording. You're not caught up on Bad Batch, so I won't spoil any Bad Batch stuff. But are you watching Invincible?
I've not. I watched the first season, and that's it. I have not watched any of the, like, from what I understand, like, there's movies? Like, there's spin-off
there's
series?
A, they went there's a movie. There's oh, a okay. spin-off. It was meant to, like, tide people over, although it still came way, way, way too late. It's just an Adam Eve origin story. It's like an hour-long episode of the show. They're about to wrap up season two, which...
Yes.
is crazy because we only got 8 episodes. Hopefully season 3, I hope that they were working on them all at once so that there's not a 2-year wait for season 3. But this season has been really, really good. I hate the way they divided it up, but there's a really fun thing in the last episode that they just aired this past week. Mark Invincible goes to a comic book convention and sees a creator that he loves who does an animated show, and they get into this whole discussion about how long animation takes and how long it's been, like, he's like, it's been so long since the last season. And, like, it's a whole, like, meta discussion that they wrote into the show. And it's really funny. But, Like, just acknowledging, like, yeah, we know that you waited forever for this and you're only getting 8 episodes. But more is coming, we promise. Season two has been really, really interesting, though. If you enjoyed season one, I would say absolutely catch up when you can. Although, no rush, because it's going to be at least next year before you get season three.
Well, isn't that a lot of having to do with Kirkman and the writers? Like, they're the same writers that are working on both Gen V and The Boys. Like, they're the kind of like creative, and that's part of the reason why it's not only been delayed, but it's taken so long. Isn't that the reason why? Or am I mistaken?
My understanding is that it's the animation. Like, it was like it was so late picked up for a season two that
That it there wasn't time, like the
yeah, it
animation
was just
house.
yeah, it was just never, and they also wanted it to be better. So I think at some point, like, what the animation they were getting was not up to par. Like,
Par, okay.
there's a there in the episode that I was talking about, the guy starts talking about, like, all the tricks that you will see people in animation use, like
Oh,
cutaways to
okay.
still
Yeah.
shots that, you know, the camera moves, but the animated characters aren't actually
Don't,
moving. So it
yeah.
tricks your brain into thinking that they're moving, or how when a character might be talking and it'll cut away to something else so that you don't see that character's lips moving, so that they can save money on, like, not having to animate that character talking. It's like I said, it's really, really funny, but it's also them kind of like, we understand the problems you had. We want to do better. Doing better is going to take time.
That's funny. I like that. I like that a lot.
I really appreciated it as somebody who got continually frustrated at how long we were having to wait and how often they kept saying season two's coming. So I'm like, for a year and a half, you've been saying season two's coming. And you know, I appreciate that they did want to get it right and have it be better, because the animation is much better in season two.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It, specifically the fight animation, like, that's the
Ah,
thing you
there we
want
go.
them to absolutely get right. The fights need to look good. And there has been, I think, a massive fucking fight in every single episode.
Oh, nice.
So
Nice. Okay. All right. Like that was, like I liked Invincible. But I kept on thinking about the fact that, like, of the Kirkman series, like, when I first read the initial, like, say, let's just say three, the first 24 issues, okay? The first three arcs, right? Like, at the time, it was one of my favorite versions of like what a comic book series can be, and taking the superhero tropes and outdoing what Mark Millar loves to do,
yeah.
but without the icky feeling that you get with Mark Millar.
It didn't, it never fe it felt like Kirkman was using the tropes and like still creating like something in a medium that he loved. Millar seems to have like kind of a disdain for the fact that,
Yeah, contempt. Yes.
yeah, it's just like, you know, like, let
It's like
them eat
Grant
cake
Morrison.
kind
He's,
of thing.
yeah, he's.
Like,
You're right. Like I compare it to like he's like Grant Morrison. He's like a drunk Scotsman that hates everything, and so that's what we get. But he's supremely talented. But there's always something in there that it's like, no, I fucking hate you guys. Fuck you, yeah. fuck you. But Kirkman isn't like that. Kirkman loves his audience.
I wonder if it is literally the difference, because Alan Moore is like that too. He has a disdain for like his comic book audience at this point. I kind of get, but like also like, you know, these are people that like the medium and like your work. Maybe don't treat them like shit. Kirkman seems to just love everything and want to find a way to like, because like everything in the Invincible story is some kind of riff on a major like property. Like it's Superman, the X-Men, it's the Avengers, it's the Justice League. He has a character called like Martian Man. Like,
yes,
it's like so obvious, you know, and it's not like he's not trying to not be obvious. He's trying to make it obvious that he's riffing on these tropes and these specific characters, but also doing like going to levels and extremes that neither one of the big two companies ever really could or would. And and also just fucking killing these people, like just murdering characters, you know, like, hey, so the semi-spoilery, Adam Eve, like she feels like a Marvel character, like has the troubled past and like very Peter Parker-y kind of thing. And almost has a story that's very much like Jubilee's at the beginning of X-Men the animated series, you know. Her parents were like, you know, kind of hated who she was. Anyway, there's a plot. I think it's in her origin movie. She basically comes across this like downtrodden neighborhood and tries to use her powers to like do something about it, but because she doesn't really understand how it's hard to explain. Basically, she tries to make a slum into a better place to live, but because she doesn't understand like the actual things that go into planning a building, you know, like waterways and like gas pipes. And she winds up creating like a disaster and that like collapses in on itself and makes the problem worse. And it's like, that's not necessarily the kind of thing that Marvel or DC would tackle with a character like that. Like,
oh no, not
have
all.
Her be the superhero and then have things like completely fall back and like she thought she was doing good and she actually made the problem worse, but also, you know, possibly cost people their lives. Like it's Kirkman does take those chances. Like what, like he puts his characters in those typical situations and is like, what's the thing that Marvel or DC wouldn't do here? I'm gonna do that. Invincible season 2, getting ready to wrap up. I wholeheartedly recommend it, especially now that all the episodes are out. You would have to catch up on the Adam Eve special, which is about an hour, or maybe a little over an hour, hour and a half maybe, and then the 8 episodes. What the movie, I won't say it's a slog, but it's so weird. You can feel how long it is, but the episodes go by so quick, it becomes bingeable. Like, I'll just put it on. And I'm just like, and they're so action-packed. It's really, really good.
I'll check it out.
I'm shocked at how good it is, but yeah, I really hope we don't have to wait 2 years for more. So they're saying 2025, but we'll see.
But then, I mean, that's literally like 18 months. Wow.
So,
okay.
Well, they're saying early 2025. So.
Oh, okay, okay.
Maybe not 9 months. So, but yeah, other than that, oh, speaking of Kirkman, I just very quickly, I did kind of, sort of, half-heartedly catch up with whatever the fuck the new Walking Dead thing is called.
Oh, the one with Rick and what's her name?
Yeah.
Coming back? Yeah. You're a glutton for punishment, brother.
Yeah,
you
are definitely it is. It is not good. It's not.
I figured as much.
I can't believe, like, if I were him, I would be like, I'm not coming back for this bullshit. Like, I'm just not gonna.
But, you know, paychecks are
wildly
fun things, yeah. You know? But, okay. Yeah. But, I mean, so actually, Norman Reedus' European tour is better than this jaunty ass, like,
yeah,
thing to bring Carl and company back. Carl.
Well, I mean, he's dead, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't mean that they won't bring him back. I mean, you know, but I'm just fucking.
The way they reunite is so fucking stupid. It's so stupid.
Is it stupider than the whole European trip what's the name goes through?
Yeah. It's not, maybe not as stupid. I don't know. I don't know. Michonne is looking for Rick, and like is all like one of the episodes is literally just her like mission to like cross whatever she's got to cross, go through whoever she got to go through to find Rick. She meets up with these new people, some of whom were in Fear of the Walking Dead, and they're kind of on their trek. A lot of them die. It's her and this one other person, and they have this thing that allows them. It's hard to explain. It's basically a rocket launcher, but not a rocket launcher. They shoot down a helicopter because they know they're looking for this like militaristic organization. They shoot down one of their helicopters, and Michonne, like it doesn't explode. You can see people like as it crashes, people like coming out of the crash site. She like trods after them, and one by one, like starts killing them. She like rips off their helmets and then slices their throats. And then one of them turns out to be.
Really? Okay, that's what I was gonna say. Is like, is the whole purpose of like taking the helmet off just because you know she doesn't just indiscriminately want to kill? Oh, good lord!
Yeah,
oh, good lord.
And I'm like, but if they had blown up the helicopter, like she, like all of it is so like ridiculous, like happenstance. I'm just like, oh my god, it's eye rolling.
Oh, good lord. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, we knew that it was going to happen, that, like, this soap opera would eventually, you know, like, again, eat its own tail, which it's definitely doing. But, I mean, there are people out there that are stands for this relationship that
I see a few people on my feed that, oh, I'm so happy Rick and Michonne are back. It's so good. And I'm watching, like, literally halfway watching it going like, and Rick is not like I get they wanted to show him as like this broken character, but like, I'm like, this ain't even the same dude. They do address it. Michonne at one point is just like, I don't even know who you are anymore. like this is not you. But, yeah, it's weird. Like see him as this, like, chicken shit version of himself, like it's bizarre.
I mean, like, you know, like I always feel like since they started doing all of this stuff, I feel like they're all working up to, like, in the next 3 years, bringing back the remaining Walking Dead people to make an Avenger-style TV show, right? Yeah. Like that's exactly what they're doing. Like, I can see the writing on the wall. And you know what? Like, I don't mind, because it's not my universe, right? It's not something that I watch, right? But it does definitely feel like, oh, they're separating them for a couple of years. They're giving everybody what they want. Like, you know, like, I guarantee you these were all story notes by Andrew Lincoln and Danai Geary, like, about what they wanted to do. And, like, you know, just like with Norman Reedus and his, like, I want to go to Europe and I want to just, like, yeah, ride around on a Harley. Like, you know, it's exactly what it is, right? And then once they're finished with the tour, they're going to be like, okay, so let's get us all back together. We'll make a lot of money. We'll get the ratings. And, you know, we'll get to, like, have a whole bunch of makeup effects. I mean, like, I feel like that's, like, just the way it's going to go, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I'll probably watch that, too.
Yeah, I know you will. I know you fucking will. Come on, let's be honest here. Like, The Walking Dead is, like, this hate watch thing that you do. Like, I mean, like, you know, everybody has their gluttonous punishment, right? Like, I feel like eventually mine is Game of Thrones, even though I've not decided to finish the other season, even though the new season is coming up, because I hate it so fucking much. But there's something that compels me. Like, I'm like, oh, maybe I should watch it. Maybe I should watch this, the Dragon Show again. But it's like that thing. Like, it's like, okay, let's see if they can get it right, even though I know they're not going to get it right, right? At least in my estimation, right? Yeah. Like you watching these shows, you're like, maybe they'll get it right this time. Maybe they'll understand. And it's like, no, they haven't. And I fucking hate this, but now I've started it, I've got to complete it.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, I guess we hit our 2 hours. That's what we've been watching this week, guys.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry for the 45 minute rant against Judd Apatow's dumbass statement.
But it was necessary. Next week, you know that Dev Patel's movie comes out next week, right?
Yeah, are you interested in it?
I'm very interested in it. You know. So I will definitely be seeing it. I know that there's other stuff, but just can't think of it right now. But I mean, you know, we're going to be back, guys. We'll be talking about something interesting. Maybe I'll get to, you know what? I know I'm going to get to Bad Batch. So we might have we can finally have a full on discussion of that show, because it's been a while since we talked some Star Wars, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we'll be back then. You can find everything I'm doing over at xwingfiles.com, and you can find my writing over at Adam's website,
themovieisle.com. We've got a whole bunch of stuff. We're just waiting for one more thing from Logan to start up moving pictures again.
I gotta share the document with you. I meant to do it earlier this week, and I've been so just preoccupied with other stuff, I forgot about it. So, no, but yeah, it's finished. Good. I'll add you to the shared document today.
Okay, all right, absolutely. Well, then we're gonna have some rock and roll on the site the end of next week, so we can kind of definitely talk about that, because the first thing that he's covering is something that I actually want to talk to him about. So yeah, stay tuned for that, guys.
So yeah, we'll see you guys next week.
Talk to you guys soon. Comics, number 3, Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Kal-El. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.